Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast, a podcast about expanding your creative capacity. Each week, we interview inspiring creatives to help you grow your freelance career. All right, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mejia Madriz, and I'm a part of the artist marketing and partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. And today we have my wonderful boss and sometimes co-host, Caton Vance, back on the pod.
Thanks, Andrea. I'm Caton Vance. I'm the marketing partnerships director here at Closer and Closer. But enough about me, as Dave normally says, because it's my pleasure to introduce today's guest, and it's no other than Dave Arcade. So Dave Arcade is a cartoon surrealist and a visual storyteller born and raised on Max Fleischer, Chuck Jones, Salvador Dali, and MC Escher. Dave's pieces are retro, pop etched in clean, thin lines, and vibrant, nostalgic. How do you pronounce this word? Palettes? That's right. Mm-hmm. It's palettes. Whether he's building a large isometric world or a small esoteric scene, Dave aims to overwhelm the viewer to convey a sense of life through his lens. Amongst others, he's worked with brands like Apple, Google, Adobe, Disney, Activision, and the NBA. Give it up
for
Dave.
Welcome, Dave.
Caton just doing it live. Nice.
I know. You crush it.
We now do it, when I do it, we do it offline because live is like too much pressure, you know?
Oh, no, I love this kind of pressure. This is a good kind of pressure. I love introducing artists in general, but also you've been hosting this podcast with Andrea for a year and a half or so. It's been a while.
It's been that long?
Do you honor, because you normally are giving really good intros to all the artists, so hopefully that did it.
It was great, Caton. Totally. Thanks, man. Well, right when you started doing it, I was like, dude, he's going for it.
Well, and on that note, Dave, I'm so excited that you're on as a guest again. For those of you who aren't avid listeners of the pod, which you all should be, Dave is typically my co-host here, and we interview other artists on the CNC roster and get to know them a little bit better. But we haven't interviewed Dave since before I was the host of the podcast and when these were still live sessions. We never even dug deep into your kind of story, because on the last one you were kind of just going into your process more than anything.
Or do you know what happened there?
Got
hosed. Like, it's when we were recording the podcast through Zoom, and that was our audio, and so my internet was acting up. And
I do remember listening to that one, and that it was a little rough. Like, it kept going like in and out, and I could hear stuff in the background. Yeah.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that was so. That's crazy. You've been listening since back then.
I've listened to every single episode.
Dude, you're the man. I didn't know that. and so I had to do it again.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, and it's like my greatest fear and why I could never be a stand-up comedian. I think the hardest thing in the world is like, and I have to do it today with like my pre-planned answers, but acting like something's live when it's already been said.
Totally.
Comedians are masterful at that. And so the whole podcast was me being like, oh, I'm glad you asked that, because, you know, it's like, I already know what I'm going to say here. But
well, I'm excited. I hope this isn't as bad as you think it's going to be with the knowing what's coming. Because we got Caton here to throw you some curveballs, so we'll be all good.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be a difference between answering your questions and his. You'll see.
Exactly. But I want to start off again, as always. Obviously, I know you've been on the podcast as a guest before, and listeners are probably familiar with like bits and pieces of your creative story in your time as a host. So can you give us like the brief Dave Arcade origin story, how you got to this point in your career? Give us the rundown to get us started.
I was born, and then I ended up on this podcast with you guys today.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave, is that the truth of your story? Is that actually accurate?
Two of those things are right on the money. I was actually born, and I ended up on this podcast with you guys. So let's go back to, I can remember all the way back to when I was three. So let's start there. No, you know, it's funny. I totally forgot to answer this question, but luckily I kind of know my story.
Yeah, it would help.
So this one is going to be live. Where did it start for me? So, I went to art school in Orange County, California, at the Art Institute of California, Orange County. which is no longer accredited. And they're a bunch of thieving robbers, sons of bitches. They charge them like $80,000 for an education. And a lot of kids left that school. Not great designers.
Totally.
Who probably didn't end up getting a job in the design industry and ended up being a manager at a grocery store and are still trying to like pay off their student loans.
And you went for design is what I'm gathering from this.
No, I want to talk about the corruption of the art. No. Yeah, I went for graphic design. I decided over the phone talking to my future wife. She's like, well, how are you going to support me? And I was like, she's like, you can draw, right? I was like, yeah. And then I don't know if you guys know. So the Aquabats.
Yes.
So the lead singer's brother was in the same room as my wife. She was at some event and she put the phone to her chest and she's like, Parker, what do you do? He's like, I'm a graphic designer for, what's the name? The logo's a monkey. It's a clothing brand.
Oh, there's a lot. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were
Bathing Ape?
I remember.
Bathing Ape?
Bathing Ape? Bob Jack. I don't know.
Steve from Stranger Things.
Totally.
So she's like, I'm a graphic designer. She's like, you should be a graphic designer. So I went to school and I graduated with honors. But oh. I only spent 3 months in the graphic design industry. I got a call from YNR, Young and Rubicam Brands in Irvine, California. A guy named Craig Evans called me up and he's like, come interview with us. And so I was making $38,000 at the time working at this design shop called Vision Design Studio on Seal Beach. And I'm sitting down with Craig and he's like, I need an art director. I was like, dude, I'm a designer. And he's like, but I like the stuff that you drew. I put an illustrated fake The Shins poster in my portfolio that he really liked. It was the last thing I added to my book. And he's like, we're kind of approaching a time. This is in 2008. He's like, we're approaching a time, or 2007, end of 2007, right before America lost all of its money. Mm-hmm. It's like, we can't just be hiring illustrators to do stuff. We need someone who can do it themselves. Mm-hmm. So I want to bring you on as an art director and then have you also design stuff. So I sat down with Cecilia Gorman, who was the talent hirer. I forgot what it's called, the HR person.
HR person.
And she's like, well, we can only offer – I didn't know if I was going to take the job, right, because I had one. And it was hard for them to pay me that meager $38,000. And right when I sat down, she's like, we can give you $65,000. I was like, I'll take the job.
Yeah, you're like, I'll do it. And wait, did you know this Craig Evans guy before? Were you guys – no? He just had your portfolio and liked what you did?
Yes. So it pays kids to – like if you do a portfolio show as you're leaving school, those who might be listening who are young, make a good leave behind. At the time, Apple iPhoto. Yeah. You could do this thing with the app where you could load in photos and make a book. Like you can make a damn book, right? Mm-hmm. And there were small –
you can still do that.
Yeah.
It's not with iPhoto anymore, but yes, you can still do that.
Yeah. So, but at the time, that was like that was kind of new, right? Like this before Instagram and making little books from, so I was like, holy crap, I can like have a little book. So Cecilia took it and she kept it on her desk for 3 months until one of the art directors quit. And like a lot of kids graduating at the time were like making these fold out things. You got to like call a number and then it reveals something that, I mean, it wasn't that complex. It might as well have been. This was just a book. And so, Craig really liked it and he called me in. I took the job and art direction is nothing like illustrating. I stayed in advertising for 10 years and worked my way up as far as, art direction taught me everything I know about the way I lay out my pieces though. So that was good, but it's a terrible industry in that you just never get to make what you want. You pitch an idea in your head. It's pure. You pitch it to your writing partner. He changes it a little bit. You pitch it to the creative director. He changes it a lot. You pitch it to the client. They change everything. And then you just end up shooting a commercial that's really corny that you don't want to be associated with. And then you got it. And then you're like, I can't put this in my book. You start again. And then that just kind of happened for 10 years. And I built up a lot of angst,
Is that represented in your current book of work?
Yeah. So when I started drawing, this explosion of stuff came out, which we'll get to. I was like, where is this coming from? And it was because I was like drawing the scenes that I had been pitching all these years in a way that I wanted to depict them. And I was like, I have control here. I'm the master of this little domain. It was very powerful. And awesome. But so then I got laid off because I was drawing too much. I was an associate creative director, and they're like, "Why aren't you going to meetings and managing this?" And I was like,
"I don't want to.
That's not really what I like to do anymore. I came here because you were going to pay me, and now I need to do other things."
Yes, totally. And I, it's not like I saw it coming. I mean, it was the worst day of my life at the time, and I couldn't feel my toes or my hands when my boss was like, "This day comes for everybody.
Yeah,
today's your day." And I was like, "I've got a family. I've got a mortgage. You're a son of a bitch because you're my friend, and you've totally screwed me."
Yeah.
It backfired. And I'm glad it backfired on them. But I love the man now. I love Matt now, but it backfired. Anyway. And so that brought me to September 2017. And Nate Williams, who's on our roster, I worked with Nate at the place that I got laid off from before we became
friends.
So I've always known he lives here. I can go have lunch with Nate if I want. Guys, I can do that. I have that power.
Lucky you.
So Nate, by the way, is the most creative. If you can just talk to Nate, just hit him up like on Slack and be like, "Hey, dude, how many different A's can you draw in 20 minutes? Take a picture and send it to me," and you'll get back something that is really cool. Or B's or whatever letter you like. Nate was like, "Hey, Dave, you should change your name, your last name, because it's hard to spell and people mispronounce it." I was like, "Thanks, Nate. I'm already like really insecure about like going out on my own, and now I got to do this." So if you were wondering if Arcade is my real last name, no.
It is not.
You get lucky sometimes, and you're a skater, and your name is actually Tony Hawk. Right? that's not the case with me.
That was not you.
Not me. Changed my name, put up my website. And
probably one of the best names of all time, if we're honest. Tony Hawk is pretty – that's a pretty righteous name for a skateboarder.
It is so good. Like, I wonder if there is a name that's better. I can't think of one. It might be the best name.
Yeah.
So good.
It's like person, persona, craft, everything lines up.
Totally. I agree with you on that. I'll give you that for sure. So, sorry, this is long, but I'm trying to make it short. And then
website happened.
And then I got a call, and I've got to give a shout out to all my friends who've been so supportive over the years. Like, I've done work for so many of my friends who, because of my age, are like are creative directors at the time when I first started. So they could actually make the decision and be like, "I'm going to hire Dave and I'm going to give him." And my first job was for $15,000 and it was a mural. I was like, "Wow." Like, and I remember going to my wife, she's like getting ready, and I was like, "I think I can do this." She's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I just signed on for a job for $15K. I thought I was going to get these trickle-in jobs for $1,000 here, $300 there." And so that was a real huge boost to my confidence when I got that job early on. It was for Wonderman. They were folks that I used to work with at YNR. Shout out to Susie Lim and Eric Kawaguchi, who gave me that job. And that sent me on the path that I'm on now, just illustrating crazy stuff.
So when you got laid off, was the immediate, like, were you just immediately like, "Okay, I'm going to do freelance"? Or was there a period of time where you know, you were kind of looking for more art director gigs and creative director gigs and seeing if you could continue down the route that you were going on?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I thought it's about
easy
it.
Easy interviewing you.
I thought about it for, it's not a talk too much. I thought about it for, I think, a couple of days, but then I started to reflect on my work. And the reason why I got laid off is because, like I said, I was supposed to be an associate creative director in the advertising or the advertising wing of this kind of amalgamated studio that was half design, half literally like a design studio named Axiom combined with an advertising agency named Struck here in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. So they both wouldn't lose their companies. They decided to team up.
Let's join forces. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was on the advertising team in the same room with people who are designing fonts. It's actually a really cool place to work. Shout out to Tosh Brown, who's the best designer I've ever met. And so Brent Watts, who was a mentor of mine, was, and I've talked about him before, he had me doing all of these. He found out I could draw. And so he was like, "Well, damn, I've got to do like all these murals for freaking the new Nickelodeon building in Burbank that opened up in January of 2017. He's like, I got to get a lot of work done. This is going to cost me. Like, if this went through closer and closer, the amount of work Brent did, we would have charged way over $100,000, maybe even to $200,000. That's how much. Wow. I ended up doing like 11 walls there. Like,
that's a lot.
There were, yeah, were huge pieces. And so I just started drawing for Brent, you know, starting in like 2015 and managing my ACD, my art director, and then later ACD roles. But it then just got to be too much, and my heart was clearly in one place. So when I left, when I got laid off, 2 days I thought about it. I was like, gosh, I got to get a job immediately. And I was talking to my friends, Nate Williams, Nate Wigglesworth. That's a real name, by the way. Jill DeHaan, like people who I trusted who were in the industry. And they're like, Dave, dude, you're an illustrator, man. Like, that's what you're supposed to be doing. You should freaking draw pictures. And that was it. Like, yeah. Took 2 days to change careers.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I have another question on this, and then I promise I will get to my next questions.
Gosh damn it.
But do you think that, first of all, that's really cool that all your friends were encouraging you to like do the big scary thing, right? Like they weren't,
yeah.
You know, they weren't like, yeah, like you should, you know, you've got that mortgage and those kids, you should probably be careful, bestie. but I really like, first of all, that they encouraged you to do that. And do you think that it was less scary or more scary being at the point that you were at where you like were in this established career, but you knew you didn't want to do it anymore and you knew that you wanted to do this big scary? Do you think it was easier to do because you had so much experience and you kind of had the knowledge of the landscape and you understood, okay, like this is a viable option, people do this and have mm-hmm. really successful careers? Or do you think it was harder because you were just so established? Because I know a lot of the younger illustrators that come on the pod, you know, they're like, I didn't even know that you could be a freelance illustrator, and then all of a sudden I just started doing it. So how do you think that like affected your decision making and like made it more or less difficult for you?
So I was lucky in that I had hired illustrators as an art mm-hmm. director. So I was like, okay, I know the types of projects that you need an illustrator on. I know it's a viable career. I know it can be done. I mean, hell, I was hired by Brent, but not paid.
Yeah.
The right, you know, I just paid my salary to do it.
You were already doing the job.
Yeah. So I knew it was there, but I don't know if this is the direct answer to your question, but it was more terrifying for me to go back to being an art director because there's only one agency in Salt Lake I wanted to work for. I didn't really like any of the other ones. And I also knew that it was terrifying for me to betray my heart and what I actually wanted to do that was like reverberating through my soul. Thinking about betraying that felt awful. And so it was actually more scary to at the thought of looking for another art direction job than to just path of least resistance, just give into this thing that has been nagging you since birth. Just go do it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does.
I think it definitely answered that question. I'm curious, like that thing, that feeling that's been nagging you since birth, how would you describe that? Because I feel like most artists have this overarching desire for creation, but they don't know how to articulate that feeling. And you've been doing this a long time and you've been living with this feeling for a long time. What do you think that is?
It actually kind of gets into Andrea's question.
I'm not meaning to get there. Sorry.
No.
Feels like a natural
I was
spot.
About to say this might be a good segue.
That's a really good segue. Like, I mean, her question is why do you illustrate the things you do? And I want to address that feeling like head on, Kate. And that's a good one. So
cool. Let's combine them. That's what we're here for.
So Andrea,
live
so,
and organic.
Yeah, no, it's great. Andrea, do you want to ask your question for our listeners?
So, I'll ask it. Dave, you know, he's so used to hosting. He's just knows what's coming next. Basically I just wanted to ask, like, I remember when we had Chitty Wayne on the podcast, who like is, you know, just so good at talking about his craft and like why he does what he does. You were super impressed with that as well, like the way that he would articulate the intention behind his work. And I think this might be a little uncomfy for you, but now that you've had some time to think about it, it might be a little bit easier. But why is it that you illustrate the things that you do in the way that you do, and probably has a lot to do with this fire? Because your pieces are really time consuming, and I'm sure you could do things like the quick and dirty, cheap way and like make it a lot easier on yourself. So why do you choose to take this path?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, Andrea. and to address like, what is this feeling from Caton? So like the first part, like why I do what I do. I kind of feel like since I can remember, my senses have been overwhelmed. Like, for example, if I'm in like a large city, right? Like I see the buildings and I see people and I see the cars. And I see it in perspective, right? Like I learned perspective early on from my dad. Kind of like a scene from a movie, right? Mm-hmm. If I was lying, here's a lie, Kate and I could tell. Like, I see a grid overlaid on the city in perspective. I don't see it like the Terminator. Shut up, phone. But I do see the perspective, and it's kind of like laid out like a scene, like it's squared off. And, mm-hmm. and then the colors kind of register, and then I focus in on faces and fashion and like materials and the make and models of cars. And it all just sort of, my brain doesn't take the time to like filter these things in order. It's just like into my head. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of notice what's happening, and like, I'll see, we'll talk about examples, right, that are made up, like a woman walking a dog, but like her leash gets wrapped around a pole and she's trying to get like kids skate by and they're laughing at her, right? I see all this stuff and her like minor predicament, like everywhere all the time. I'm overwhelmed, but not anxiety ridden. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm more in like awe, and I've always kind of been this, and kind of gets what your question, Caton. Like I kind of in love with the organized chaos of life. But I'm also in love with like the inverse, right? Like quiet moments where my mind is filled with a lot of wonderful clutter or commotion, or when I see somebody who's clearly dealing with something, they might as well be in like a city filled with clutter and commotion, but they're just battling something, right? And I feel like there's some painters who can just like depict the hell out of this, just one person and their struggle and just their posture. And you're like, wow. Like you told a story just with mannerisms.
That one, yeah.
So the first medium for me has always kind of been music, right? Like it mm-hmm. depict the emotional range of what I've just described through music. That's my first go-to. But my art and how I make a living is kind of an expression. How my heart pounds for this stuff, right? Like just life first, not art. Life and people. Mm-hmm. From what I have seen and what I've seen and what I've experienced, there's a lot happening in my pieces because there's a lot happening to me at all times. Mm-hmm. And it's this kind of passion that I just feel for stuff that's really corny. You know, like I posted a reel the other day of clouds and me riding my bike. To me, that's everything. Like that was, mm-hmm. that's before the work. It comes that passion for life. So what that is, I don't know, Kate. And I think it's in the mind of everybody, they have a filter and they have a lens and that's all on brand for that person. Mine just happens to be this one that is loud drums and big guitars and big, beautiful clouds and wonderful, beautiful people and babies and children laughing and color. Like I love all that stuff.
So I want to know if I summarize all this in like a sentence, if you were going to design a guitar pedal that had all the elements of how you perceive the world in it, you'd have your family, the tools that you use to create this art, all of the experiential things that are flowing on around you. And you'd start probably getting representative of those different objects that would be baked onto the inside of it. And like your pen, if you will, is the device that's going to like make the music with this guitar pedal. And I'm using the guitar pedal because it's one of the latest things that you've posted. And when the guitar pedal breaks open, there's a whole bunch of stuff inside that makes the rock and roll ultimately. So for you, to summarize it all, it's really your perspective of life shapes how you create the art that you're making on a day-to-day basis. Because it's so motivating, just you opening your eyes, there's too much to share, and why wouldn't you share it?
Yeah. Wow, I love that. You said that better than I could say it.
Caton's in marketing.
Yeah, no, and he's a writer. I mean, Caton's written books.
It's a skill.
Book, singular.
Like, we'll say you've written a book. Come on, man. Like, that's crazy.
Could easily write many more.
He will. He will. He's in the process right now of thinking of his next book, whether he realizes it or not.
But so, do you see what I'm trying to get at though with that? I think we tend to overcomplicate some of these things, even for our own, from our own perspectives. But I hear that's probably the coolest thing that I've heard you ever say, even on this podcast, is that you are motivated by your actual lived experience in such a way that you want to share the day-to-day reality with people. Because have you stopped and paid attention? This is wild. All of this is actually bonkers. Yes. Y'all are just walking around pretending like it isn't bonkers. Are you mental?
Yes. No, that's exactly it. We might be 40 years into this. Andrea, we know you're 14. You're 14 years into this. But no matter how your age, and you get this with Salvador Dali. He even toward the end was saying the same. Isn't this freaking bonkers? Look around, right? And I totally love and respect. I don't want this to come off as disrespectful for artists who depict people, because we live in a very interesting time of art that will be defined by the person. It makes a lot of sense. The kids who were born into the social media era have grown up seeing more people and have been exposed to more people, just people, than any time before. And so they draw what they see, right? I wasn't exposed to that. So I kind of have this mix, and that's why I don't draw people. I draw things. I come from an era of things, of devices, and nature, right? This weird kind of these two opposite things. So for me, it's I'm trying to throw in the kitchen sink into almost everything. And that's why, and it's very, and I haven't even come close to the awe part of it yet. The thing you're describing, isn't this bonkers? I'm still working on that. I'm working up to that. I'm still learning my own visual language. But throwing the kitchen sink in there, everything in the kitchen sink is it gets exhausting sometimes. So I've kind of also figured out a way to make smaller pieces that still throw a lot at you, kind of a verse from a song instead of an entire song, if you will.
Well, I want to challenge you one real quick on one perspective there before we go to Andrea's next question, which is I know you're working on the craft and you don't feel like you are sharing that big thing, but as someone that has seen your work and looked at your Behance and some of the NFTs that you've created, and then the complexity of the motion that can happen in some of your pieces, I think that you're definitely closer than further in regards to sharing that perspective with the world. Because if you slow down and look at any of Dave Arcade's pieces, you're definitely going to get more than you bargained for. If you don't, you're not paying attention.
Oh man, I really appreciate that. Thank you. That's encouraging to hear. And I know that the greatest geniuses of the craft, Picasso and Dali, would push back and be like, no, I am not close. How dare you? That's not me. I need that encouragement because I know less what I'm doing than those guys, but I am just the same level of genius as them now.
Exactly.
I hate it when my friend,
you're the best illustrator of all time.
I'm the best guys. I might be the best illustrator of all time. So, I gotta put my plug in that I've tried to put in every podcast. I'm one of the best illustrators in the world.
Yeah. Thank you.
I've been trying to convince myself of that, Kate.
You did say that a lot throughout these podcasts. Yes. That for the record, if anyone's actually listening to these, you definitely have heard Dave say that before.
I'll say it again. It's the Oasis theory that they got famous by saying we're the biggest band in the world. And everyone's like,
and then they did.
And they did. It won't happen for me that way. I just think it's fun. I do want to get at one thing in your question, the last part of your question about do things a lot cheaper and quicker. And I think this will make sense because it honestly kind of goes against, by the way, people, the marketing team here, they need a better name. They need the all-star team should be their name. They have slowly kind of become the soul of Closer and Closer a little bit. Well, maybe not the soul, because the soul is the art, but they're the brain. Let's say they're the brain, right? They've slowly become the brain of Closer and Closer.
It's just me, Kate, and KJ at our individual levers being left foot, right foot.
No, you guys
make it move.
you guys have created, you're creating, like, and this is going to lead your careers, and I'm telling you, you're going to write books about it. You're writing the book on artists marketing themselves, and you're really good at it.
Thank you.
I kind of, because I'm stuck in some ways, I'm trying to change them, but there's also some things that I don't want to change. And what I mean by that is, yes, my work is time consuming, but for what I do, I'm actually really fast. And I would love if illustration was a sport. And it's like, we're now Dave Arcade started, he started drawing some lines, and now he's going on to the big helmet with the horns, and now the visor is broken. And then it's like, hey, we're moving on to this other artist who we don't have a name, and he's going much slower. I'm really fast at what I do.
Yeah.
But that's why I can draw a lot of stuff. But each line is a freaking tightrope. It's very intentional. There's no mystery. Mm-hmm. There's no happy accidents in what I do. Mm-hmm. We kind of live in
Bob time- Ross. You're very precise.
Yes, me and Bob, I'd be like, Bob, shut the F up. I'm not going to swear. No, I love Bob Ross. We kind of live in a time of like quick, down, and dirty, right? Which is cool. I envy it because I wish I could do it. But I can't sacrifice – and this is going to sound cynical, but I can't sacrifice my code for like likes and views. I've done it enough. I know how to do it enough to get it, and I'm – trying to figure out my way and the way and fuse mm-hmm. them in an authentic way. And I think mm-hmm. I'm starting to kind of figure that out. But what it kind of comes down to is I'm just like the same like little boy that my mom was like, hey, you can do whatever you want and kind of be whoever you want. And so I'm just trying to follow through on that, whatever that means. So if that means mm-hmm. I depict like complexity with really tight, clean lines in a time where like simple – roughly drawn images are the thing, so be it. Like this mm-hmm. is my follow through, and it began decades ago. Mm-hmm. And it boils down to my respect for the craft, or how Cheaty Wayne put it. Remember when he was like, I knew I could paint photoreal things, so I did it.
Yeah.
I feel like I can depict like whatever I kind of want at a deep level of quality and precision. So I do. And that's a golden key in my hand that I wouldn't sacrifice for anything.
Yeah, I think that's a really wise thing. And also, for a slight clarification, I hope that all the artists feel that way when it comes to even sharing their work or the process, because we don't want anybody chasing likes and that kind of stuff, because the reality is that's like a dead-end street from the jump, because that intent yeah. and that desire like comes across. I think we've all been saturated with so much content and so much media for especially Andrea and myself in regards to like the millennial and Gen Z's, like it's existed. I'm part of a generation that is like yeah. remembers before the internet, but just barely like
yeah.
and the advertising and all that kind of stuff, you can smell bullshit from a mile away.
Totally.
And you can tell when someone is just doing it for the attention. Attention is still the commodity though, and that's the thing that we all struggle with. You still need the attention.
Yeah.
But your intent behind how you get it matters very Bingo. Much.
I love that, dude. Thank totally. You for clarifying that. Because, man, Caton's like a quote book, you know? Like He's, your intention yeah. intention is the commodity, but the intent behind it is what matters. I freaking love that.
Yeah. Caton's great at I'm putting glad. Ideas into words, truly.
Yes.
You guys, this isn't a podcast about Dave Arcade. Say, let's keep going to your next question.
I love that this podcast is like half interviewing Dave and half complimenting Caton. On hey, how good he is.
Andrea, we have plenty of compliments for you.
It's okay. We can do that later. Don't worry.
You're going to be you're going to own Close
She'll
to Close
so
for
one day. She'll get so uncomfortable if we just start complimenting her.
Like, yeah, so, I'm already like, I love turning
the
red. Back.
I love the purses hanging up behind you. I love Thank you. No, yeah, you're going to own Closer and Closer one day. This is just slowly happening. It's going to be how the guy who owned McDonald's. He just all these little tiny moves. And then one day he's like, no, I own this place. And the original founders were like, wait,
how'd you do that?
How'd you do that? And he's like, I have a plan. So, okay. Sorry.
Thanks. Anyways. Okay. Well, what we were just talking about, how like people are getting better at sniffing out the bullshit. And how the intention behind your work matters. It's kind of ties into my next question. And this isn't necessarily a question about you, Dave, but I want to get your perspective on it because you have talked to so many artists on the roster and just like throughout life that I think you might have like a good thought here. Why do you think it's so hard for artists to talk candidly about why their work is important and how much thought goes into their work? Because I think that's something that I run into a lot in this podcast is I'll ask someone like, why do you do what you do? And they're like, I just like drawing pictures. It's nice. You know, I enjoy it, which is great, obviously. But yeah. like what you just did, I think it's very hard for other people in your position to do. And yeah. I want to hear why you think.
Yeah, no, it's, I thought about this and I think there's a lot to say on this, but to kind of keep it simple, I think it starts off with like fear of being ridiculed is always the first thing, right? For what you want to say. And we live in a time where it's like, gosh, you can't only be ridiculed, but your whole life can be ruined. And if it's not ruined, you're at least going to deal with so many negative comments that it's just going to stress you out to a degree that you don't deserve. So then, you know, that could lead down a few roads. You could depict what's popular instead of what you actually believe. Or somebody, well, yeah, you could depict what's popular instead of what you believe, which would make it so you don't really want to talk about that thing, right? Like, it's like, I don't know. Like, I just, no, please don't ask me how passionate I am about this topic because I actually don't care. That's fine. Like, you know, a lot of people do that. Or you're too, like, you have folks who are too passionate. Right? I can be too passionate about things. They get way too fired up to talk about it professionally. This is another way. Or I think the most common thing is most of us are still trying to figure out what we're trying to say. You know, we're really good at what we do. Like we can draw, we can paint. We have that skill, but we're still exercising the mental capacity to conceptualize an idea and then execute it. And which is kind of a superpower when you talk to an artist like this, who are like, you're so good at what you do. Like, what are you doing? They're like, I don't know.
Do you think it's an instance of like being too close to the work where like you're just so deep in it that you don't even have like a moment to pull yourself out and be like, what am I doing right now?
Yeah, for sure. Like if you look at Kim Jong-ji's work, who is the greatest illustrator on the planet. It's like Kim Jong-un. I'm sorry, Kim Jong-i. G, but it's Kim Jong-ji. I don't know the naming mechanism with the Korean naming mechanism. Why, like, you know, but so it's, he's a G.
Got it.
J-I. But this dude can draw anything from any angle. Think about that. From his head.
Yeah.
Anything from any angle. That's hard. It's wild. But I don't know if he would be able to tell you what he's doing because it will be like cowboys floating in a bar above the table. They're playing poker and they're shooting each other in the face. But then in the corner, there's a guy at a desk doing his taxes. So he just draws stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think he does it.
Do you like the artist that did the Shaolin Cowboy? Like have you seen this comic book, Dave?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, Dave. Okay. Well, we'll put it in the podcast notes too, but I think you'd really like this artist because that depiction of what you just said reminds me hardcore of the Shaolin Cowboy. Dark Horse Comics released it and it is very, very cool. And it's very much up your alley. And I cannot believe I'm just thinking of it. I jumped in because I got too excited because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to show Dave this now.
Sorry. Dude, I need to get any recommendations that you have like that, throw them my way because I often don't have time. I'm influenced by stuff for sure, but especially these days, especially since I started Dave Arcade, I just don't have the same time to find things. So I if you got something like that, please show it to me. But yeah,
I will. I did want to jump in on the other, your subject around like sharing your voice though. I think there's something there and you mentioned, people can be shamed. I mean, like there's a really great book by John Ronson called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. It came out, I think, like 2012 when Twitter was like at its peak. And there's people that, you know, put tweets out there and they lost their job because the crowd came for them and the crowd like took them down and like they were joking. It was like a slightly uncolored comment, but then like the public just crucified them, really.
Sure. Yeah.
That obviously is the dark side of what happens when you're sharing your work. But for the record, humanity has been doing this since the dawn of time. They decide what is going to be good and what's going to be not. And then they used to literally crucify. Glad we don't do that anymore. We've progressed on some level. That's a
good point. They used to do it literally. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but my whole thing with that to you is like, I'm curious, like, how have you gotten over that portion to start flexing the muscle? Is it the thing you said, like sharing your perspective? Because you also agree that that is still actually vital in sharing your work because like it is a part of, there's no gatekeepers. Yeah. You can actually share your work with the entire world, which is bonkers if you think about it.
Yeah, it is bonkers. Like we just on that note, we just don't realize the power we have. And then when it's gone or too old, or like generations are going to look back and be like, these guys had it all and they didn't. And that's fine. How could we know? We're born into it or dropped on our doorstep. It's not our fault. Future historians suck it. Anyway. Okay. A few ways. I'm still figuring this out, you know, but I started with pop culture and just throwing like little references in there, but being a pro illustrator, that's in my head instead of freelance illustrator. I've always wanted to be a pro something. So I call myself a pro illustrator and I feel like, oh yeah, I could be sponsored. I'm telling you guys, there's a whole thing here. Illustrator, sponsor. They draw.
We're working on it.
Yeah. Let's.
It's going to be a sport. We could figure this out. Maybe we can do our own sport and come up with an idea.
Nike, just give me, I'll wear your stuff in my streams and then you pay me and then I'll do Nike art. Anyway, there's the thing there. We're going to figure it out, guys. I'm telling you, it's real.
Illustration Olympics.
Yes. So just from my own experience, I'm not the greatest at this, you know, like I'm still trying to figure it out. Like one of my favorite artists on earth is Daniel Arsham, who is, he's a sculptor and painter. Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what he's talking about. He's incredible at marketing.
And he's one of the greatest artists ever. Like he's going down in history. But he's not like political or anything. He just knows exactly what he's doing. His thing is, these are artifacts from the year 3000, or they were found in the year 3000. Mm-hmm. It's a guitar from 1,000 years ago, and it's a sculpture, you know, and it's it's eroded and there's crystals growing in it. He knows exactly what he's doing. So I'm still trying to figure that out. And what I found when I kind of want to say something inflammatory, I code it. I make a pun, or I do visual equivalent of what's that called when you have there's like an eyeball and then the ocean and then something else. So it's like I see.
Oh, yeah. It's like I don't know what those are called.
You create metaphors. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mammogram. That's what it's called. No.
Oh, yeah.
I believed you for a split second.
Yeah, you believed. Oh, Andre, you're breaking up. We're gonna have to cut you from the podcast. I'll put it in code. But I'm not really. I actually just created a piece now. It's called the Polymath, and a polymath is somebody who knows everything. But it's actually a pretty disgusting figure, and it's a monument, and there's all these people looking up at it. And this is answering your question, Caitlin. And I was like, it was the first time I was like, gosh, I freaking hate people on social media who know everything. And it's like, what did your mom teach you? Answer with that. Don't freaking Google it and then come back to Steve at I Love Boats 79 and tell him he's an idiot because all these facts that I know aren't in your head. You're a polymath and you want everyone to look at you and, well, you're a bullshit polymath. And or, like, Kate, you actually know stuff, right? You're one of these guys who, like, I would hate to run into on social media. Is like, oh gosh, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. He's not Googling it. He just responded like 4 seconds later. He actually knows what he's talking about. I hate arguing on social media. Like, it's one thing that I think is just a giant cancerous wart on the ass of the world.
Yeah. Well,
so I made a piece of art about it. But when you see it, it's going to be cryptic. And you're going to think about it.
So you're sharing your perspective with that, but you're also like, you have you're avoiding the original thing of fear of like, I actually don't want to be criticized, but you are still sharing this piece with the world about criticism.
Yes. And the cryptic part, sorry, might make it sound like I'm trying to avoid confrontation. I'm just really passive aggressive. I would prefer to share it in a passive aggressive way than a very direct way. But I guess my point in wrapping this up is the reason I'm starting to move closer and closer to we gotta tell the guests they have to fit that in to their interview somehow. Just we'll make it up. We'll be like, oh, and we'd really like you to fit that in. We'll see who does it and who doesn't.
You're getting closer and closer to
I'm getting closer and closer to trying to say some things that might that come from a point of view of things where, I actually feel passionate about stuff. But I think for the most part, I'm going to end up in the Daniel Arsham category. Not how good he is. I'm not comparing myself to that guy. Mm-hmm. The category of depicting things that I think are cool. I'm always going to stay there. I'm always going to try to err on the side of positive. I think it's way better as an artist. From my personal experience, I think it's more fun to explore the imagination and what's possible and show somebody something they haven't thought of than to go make a piece of art that says all these things about our current state. That's just not me. But sometimes I'm going to do that, and I'm doing a piece like that now. But I'm always going to – I'm kind of a surrealist at heart. Like I want to make what's not there, but yet based on everything that is there, and then remix it through my lens and show it to the world.
That's awesome.
I love it. Cool. Well, we're running low on time, but I do want to ask this last question to you because I think you're a good candidate for this question. And I don't know, just sounds like a fun one. Okay. So I'm going to go for it and then we're going to wrap it up after.
Sure.
So we have a lot of great conversations here on the podcast, you and I and our guests, and you're also like outside of this podcast space, listeners won't know this, but you are like super engaged, with the wider community of artists here at CNC. I feel like you're just one of those artists on the roster that like everybody knows, everybody is friendly with, and like, you're just always around and you're always there for them, which I think is really awesome. Okay. First of all, why are you this way? Like, do you have an affinity for community? Is that something that you've always looked for? Or is it just something that you found here? And then off of that, which was my actual question to you, what is something that you've learned from your fellow artists on the roster since joining?
Yeah, my wife put it best a few weeks ago. I didn't even realize this. She's like, you get along with everybody. It's like, I do. Like, I like people a lot. I love people. I love them so much I make fun of them, which makes you think that I don't love them. I'm just like Lenny from Of Mice and Men when he strangles the kitten because he loves it so much.
You just love it too much.
That's me. I love people. I haven't always been community focused. I'm not good at building one. On Instagram, there's a fella called The High Road. He's got like 100,000 followers. I remember when he had like 2,000 followers, and I swear that was 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. He built it fast. He knows exactly what he's doing, like what he draws. He's probably drawn more penises than anybody ever, but he knows what he wants to draw. So, some people are really good at building community. I'm not. I'm good at being part of one. Maybe I'll learn how to build one someday. I like talking to people. I like getting conversation going. I want to know what the hell people are actually thinking. Like, Kate, mm-hmm. No bullshit kind of. Or you can smell bullshit, but mile away, 10 miles away, 11.3 miles away. I'm kind of same way. It's like, what are you passionate about? What gets you going? Like, what are some experiences you've been through? What have you learned? And like, we're all here. Like, what are you learning? What I want to know. So there's that. But what I've learned from our fellow artists, and some of these will be negative and some will be positive, I've learned we're all too busy. We're all the same level of busy. Thought I was the only one. Not the case. We're all too obsessed, for better or worse. We're all way too worried. The artists, at least.
Amen. That last one. Too worried.
Worried. Holy smokes. If you guys were to peek in on our Feedback Friday calls, it's a lot of just nail biting. It's like, well, what if we tried? And it's good. It's helpful because you can get rid of some of that worry and get some answers. The artists and the commercial ones, which we are, the pro illustrators, they don't really fit. What I've learned is they don't really fit the tortured artist mold. We're all very social. We're very social. We're super curious. And this is one I didn't really expect. Humble. I'm not saying this to myself. I'm talking about all the artists I've talked to. Very humble. They're first self-centered as we kind of come across on our social media because we have to be. It has to be like me, hire me. The artists I talked to are very kind, humble, and aware that this could all be over tomorrow. Like, none of us are like, oh yeah, I got freaking hired for a job. Like, of course I did. Of course I get hired for jobs. Like, it's never that. It's always like, yeah, you know, got some stuff coming in. That's where, you know, some of the worry comes from, but it's a somewhat of a healthy worry. You gotta learn to enjoy life when you know there's not a job coming in. That's the key. Mm-hmm. I've also learned that they're very clever. They all have a visual goal in mind and they figure out how to make that happen. I'm amazed by this part. They're all like, okay, I know what I got to do, or I know what I want to do. How am I going to do that? And you have everyone from an artist who just paints to digital artists and the tools that they use. And, you know, like Chidi, who is like, I brought him up twice. I remember on our podcast, like, I'm not a fanboy. Now I've brought him up freaking twice.
You're a fanboy.
It's actually been like 3 or 4 times, but you know, who's counting?
Who's counting?
No, he was really, he's a really interesting guy, right? He's like the anomaly on the roster. Cause he's like,
you're all interesting.
Well, he's making sculptures.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can make a sculpture.
I built this room out of a sculpture. You're looking at a stone room. No. But the last thing is, well, do I want to say this? They all take cocaine. No, we all have our own reasons and for our self-expression. Or self-expression is like the common denominator. And we all have our own path through life and our lived experiences and what we love and what we hate and fear and the things that we've conquered. But what I've realized is all of those things are inseparable from their art, whether they realize it or not. You know, when we're talking to... oh, she's going to hate me because she's my new friend.
Anna.
Yes, Anna. She's been through a lot, you know, and she talked about it. And that is in her art, right? Like her art is an escape from that. We know that Carmi writes these things for herself. Mm-hmm. Those are notes to her, which is beautiful, right? And then they help other people. But first and foremost, just like put the oxygen mask on before you put it on your kid. Like I gotta help me first and hopefully it helps somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so I love that everybody's life experience, no matter where they're from, is inseparable from their art. And it's a beautiful thing. And you can see it once you talk to them. You're like, oh, wow. And that's the beauty of talking to an artist is they can share that connection.
Totally. Mm. I love it. That's so wonderful. And I think, yeah, I was actually thinking about this earlier when you were talking about I think when you give my answer to, oh yeah, like the intention behind your work and all of that, I think it's interesting because I also noticed this connection point then in what you and Chidi talked about, and you just said it perfectly, is that like artists you don't have to complicate the basic premise. Everybody on the roster and every artist is just drawing what they know and drawing what they've lived. And the important thing to like differentiate yourself and like your work is figuring out what your perspective is and what it is that you are seeing that is different from everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that we wrapped up on the same note.
Yeah. No, it is great.
We never do this.
I know. I'm doing this thing where it's like, I'm about to start talking. And it's like, Dave, don't talk.
Before you keep going, I'll close this out with the last question that I ask every single guest. Dave Arcade, can you tell the people where they can find you?
So on Instagram, I'm Dave Arcade. I'm unified across the socials. Instagram, I'm Dave Arcade.
Love this for you.
If you like Twitter, I need more followers. Dave Arcade. It's actually Dave _ Arcade. Behance, Dave Arcade. Website, DaveArcade.com hasn't been updated in like 4 years, but I'm going to change that. I know. And then my main site is Closer and Closer. Just search for Dave Arcade. You can go down the street. I have a shop. There's a store called Dave Arcade. You can go in there and you can buy my work. I have a store in every town in the U.S.
Love to see it.
That's a lie, Kate. Deal.
It's a lot. Yeah,
I picked up on that one. That one was pretty obvious. I got that one.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Kaiten. And until the next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to receive the latest episodes. You don't want to miss some of the incredible conversations that we have coming up. They'll be full of powerful insight to help you reach your full creative potential. To find out more about us, visit www.closerandcloser.co.
If you're a fan of the Closer and Closer podcast, then you're probably a fan of the Closer and Closer roster too. Spending an hour of your day with them is fun, but did you know there's an even better way to keep up with everything our roster's up to?
Sign up for our weekly newsletter, The Dose, to get fresh inspiration from our artists every single week, along with email notifications every time we upload a new episode and exclusive freebies from time to time. Head to the show notes to get signed up and stay in the loop.